out to one of the original producers and founders of From the Vault, Christopher Sprinkle. Thanks for listening and keeping our history alive.
Yo, 1212, this is AC Long from the Project Blow Crew Freestyle Fellowship down with Free Radio in Santa Cruz 101, www.freeradio.org, on licensed, commercial, free, independent, like I said before, independent music, radio. All right, one love.
We present Closed Planet by John Hynam. Closed Planet. We must suppose that we've taken a step forward in time and attained the era of a new space age. By now, the nearer planets have been explored, their seas, continents, and skies plotted and mapped, their inhabitants, for many have been found to possess their own advanced civilizations, drawn within the concordat of a great galactic council. Only the outer cosmos still challenges the courage and endurance of our voyagers across the oceans of space. But interplanetary travel and discovery are no longer the cherished prestige symbol of any single nation or any one group of nations. Having long since composed their differences in a Pax Universalis, the peoples of our planet have pooled their scientific knowledge, skills, and resources, even their technicians, in ever more far-reaching probes towards the uncharted horizons of infinity.
Sol 3, exploration ship Dromio. Thank you, Galactic 5. Your message received and understood. Hey, operator, tell them we'll be home in less than 3 months. 3 months, man, 3 months.
Captain Hunsaker, after all, I am the medical on board this ship.
I'm aware of that, Lieutenant DeWitt.
And I am telling you, you should take more sleep.
I feel fine.
I don't believe you.
That's your opinion as a doctor or as a woman?
Both, if you like. Look here. Take these two pills. Hand over to Commander Arbus and get some rest.
Oh.
Curl, we are in hyperspace. Just about everything's automatic, isn't it? I had a good mind to put in a check sheet on you. Refusal to cooperate with the medical office.
You do that, and I'll sign it.
Colonel Hunsaker, you're the limit.
Good. Now we've said everything, Leela. Go and see that husband of yours. The astrogation office is having a sweet time these days.
I'll see Han when I've finished with you.
Doc, you have finished with me. Now, how's the baby coming on?
He's fine.
Won't be born on Earth, will he?
What is it matter? He'll be born.
Hunsaker.
Astrogation section here, Captain. DeWitt speaking. Going off duty now. Lieutenant Kelly in charge.
Thank you. Oh, Han, your wife's here. You like a word with her?
Thanks, Captain.
Han, hello. I'll be off in a few minutes.
Haven't you done enough yet?
Must look in at the sick visa. Kisanga's in there again. Same old trouble.
Well, don't be long, sweetheart.
Come on, take it easy, Dan boy. It's only because you missed a pill. The one you just had will do the trick.
I hope so, Jennings. I'm the only man in this crew that gets it. Do you think it's anything to do with my being an African?
No, Dan. Geo-nostalgic psychosis can strike any Earthman. It's a longing for Earth. That's what it is. Look, here's Nurse Longman.
And psychosis may be what all you science fiction fans will have to suffer through because, unfortunately, we are not going to play the rest of this. It's called, I guess that's called a Closed Planet Part 1. And unfortunately, it's time for Open Mic with Bathrobe's Piers, Broadsides Part 947. So stay tuned. Don't go away, and I'll be right back. You're tuned to 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's gonna be good.
Good.
It's gonna be good.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna be good. 2 weeks and it's all working just the way I knew it would. And I don't sit at work just waiting for the phone to ring.
Uh-huh. It's a good, 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 good thing. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. The sex is still amazing and we don't stay up that late. It's almost been a month and she's as happy as a clam. Do I look great? I am Natalie. And this must be Henry. A pleasure to finally meet you. Come in. Why don't you join us for dinner?
Dad, Henry can't really stay. He's got,
It's gonna be good.
Homework.
It's gonna be good.
Surgery.
Sit right down together like a happy family should.
Crazy.
Eat and talk and laugh and joke. My pod, my brood, and me. It's gonna be good, you'll see. Smile and chat and just like that, we'll all be all okay. It's gonna be great, it's gonna be great, it's gonna be great that way. Hey, it's gonna be good, it's gonna be good. Sit right down together like a happy family should. And eat and talk and laugh and joke, my family and me. It's gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be, gonna be, gonna be, gonna be, gonna be good, 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 gonna be good, gonna be good, gonna be good, you'll see.
Yes, it's going to be good, and hopefully that's what the show is going to be. Welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's Next to Normal, one of my recently favorite musicals about, it's a kind of a mixed bag, but it has a critique of psychiatry sort of implicit in its lyrics, and I like its stuff. So my apologies for those who don't like musicals, but you have to suffer through the musical moments, and I suppose I'll throw in a few other tunes, too. Anyway, this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. For those who don't know what the show is, twice a week, I come into the studio and do the show, and it's stuff from the streets, stuff from meetings I've been to, reports on court cases I've lost and lost, occasionally won, and those of other people who are struggling often to stand up for their rights or the rights of other people locally, mostly locally. Though I do have weary criticisms of the murderous leadership. Is it Mitt Obamny, Barack Romney? I'm not sure. The guy who won the election. I guess it must be Obama. Anyway, we have a leadership through a duopoly that actually has exactly the same murderous foreign policy and domestic suppression policy, which everyone ignored in the election. But I didn't occasionally. So that's the one point at which I go beyond the local, at least one kind of persistent point where I go beyond the local. I'm going to begin the show by contacting Linda LeMaster, or Lighthouse Linda, as I've called her, and she sometimes calls herself. She is being tried in Department 1 for the last few days for the crime of essentially political protest, the political protest at the county building. They don't call it political protest. That would sound so un-American or un-Santa Cruzan. They call it lodging, you know, because what was legal 4 days before suddenly becomes illegal 4 days, 4 days later, and that already has been charged, leveled against Occupy Santa Cruz, against Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, two other Peace Camp 2010 occupants from 2 years ago. What's amazing to me is that DA Bob Lee, and rather high-energy underlings, are undertaking a trial that is going on 2 years later, and there's no protests to disperse. There's no large crowds to worry about. There's no threats of sleep-ins happening at the moment, though perhaps there should be. I'd like to see those things happening. They've been able to successfully use just the threat of arrest to disperse people. But first the Occupy Santa Cruz, then the Peace Camp. I'm sorry, first the Peace Camp 2010, then the Occupy Santa Cruz last year. And then they've been cracking down even more viciously on people who aren't even protesting, but just trying to survive along the riverbank and the Poganips and the parks, outside Santa Cruz. That's actually something you're going to hear today. I'm going to start playing a lot of these interview tapes that I've been not playing because the tape broke and I had to get it repaired, which I did. Hats off to Johnny on the Spot, John, who helped me put together the latest tape. I've also been really occupied with this trial over the hill, the civil trial of two mayors, which I've described occasionally on Indie Bay, and I've yet to write the It's not really the final chapter, but it certainly is a definitive chapter in that, which you probably, if you're a regular follower of the case, the mock Nazi salute case, where Mayers had me arrested for what they call disruptive behavior, but which nobody noticed but them. So it could hardly have been truly disruptive. It was simply something that they felt was indecorous and that they wanted to eliminate in their city council. And, of course, in so doing, from my perspective and that of others, eliminate the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment insofar as false arrests involve the seizure of the person and the property of whoever's being arrested. That's me. As well as violating the Brown Act, the law that says you have the right to come to public meetings, the right to express a dissenting view, the right not to have to kiss the butt of the party leader or the mayor, the presiding officer. I guess I'll give my report first, and it's incomplete because I'm still kind of pondering and gathering more information. I have had a long conversation with the two attorneys on the case, Kate Wells and David Beauvais. And as many of you may know from the headlines in the Sentinel, the jury of eight men, four men, four women, eight-person jury came back with a unanimous verdict finding the two mayors not responsible for any kinds of violations, in essence, finding against me. And I was pessimistic all along, not because of the facts, but because I think it's a defensive mechanism. One gets pessimistic so that one sort of steels oneself that if one does get disappointed, oh, I'm disappointed already, so it's no shock. I think that's a perennial habit I have, and I got to watch it because I think it can play you false because you have to be more realistic. And sometimes being optimistic is realistic, and often being optimistic is healthy. Because we have so many negative messages we tell ourselves, and we're trained to, we're actually moved around by negative messages, threats, fear. Our needs are used to manipulate us by, I think, beginning with our families and going into the educational system and then the whole labor market, the political system. It's all very hierarchical and very much, I think, you know, a function of making people feel inadequate, fearful, compelled. That's sort of the watchword. You have to be compelled to do stuff because, you see, you're too sinful if you're into the fundamentalism of either Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, or some other such religion, or you're too lazy, or whatever. In any case, I was gloomy at the prospect of this. The jury, the two attorneys were very positive because the mayors Fitzmaurice and Crone, who were the defendants in this case, accused of falsely arresting me the first time for a Nazi salute that was silent and brief and essentially was a gesture that protested abusive behavior on their part in the most non-disruptive way possible. And the second, when Mayor, now dead Mayor Kennedy, created his own warning system, again, to repress dissenting view, a protest he didn't like about the sleeping ban. And I was essentially told, I was ousted for whispering to someone when everybody else was doing different whisperings at different times, and it was clearly targeted at me. That was what all the evidence showed. The only contrary evidence, if you want to call it evidence, was by the two mayors, who insisted that they were simply trying to preserve the order of the meeting, that there is a decorum that must be kept, that I was a perennial gadfly and disruptor, for which they presented no proof and no witnesses. They did present some clips which had me talking, but that was more to show that I came frequently. Sometimes I went like a sentence or two over my time, that I spoke frequently on items in ways that were annoying to the council members. But they really, as far as I could, they couldn't show any real disruption, either at the two meetings or any other time. And in fact, I thought the clips, which I'm going to hopefully post on Indie Bay and played some of last week here on the air, showed I was actually on topic, I think on target, articulate, within the time limits, I mean, and very sharp in my criticism of council members and staff members and other powerful interests in the city, I think, who not only criminalize homeless and poor people, but waste a lot of money protect police department abuse or shield it, back up hasty development and boondoggles that are huge amounts of public expenditure for no good reason, or at least with very little investigation. And also, I really have covered a variety of topics when I go to city council, but my main focus is civil rights for poor people and the lack of those civil rights, and a longtime crusade against the most obvious, glaring abuse of poor people, the sleeping ban. Anyway, my two attorneys were quite confident. They were very optimistic that this was going to be a win and maybe even a punitive judgment in a civil case. You know, first you have to prove there's a violation of your rights, in this particular kind of a case, your First Amendment rights, your right to speak and be present at a meeting, assemble there. And secondly, you have to prove you were falsely arrested. That's your Fourth Amendment right. And then after that, you have to prove you suffered some kind of damages. In my case, it was made it more difficult for me to come back to meetings. It made me more apprehensive. It affected my reputation as a broadcaster in some circles, in others it didn't, but in some it did. And the willingness of maybe public officials to meet with me, or because arrests, while I have been arrested before, as listeners well know, they don't sit well with some people. And if they're false arrests and you're arrested and it injures you, that's the basis for claiming some kind of damages. And it wasn't me trying to make a big financial score against the city council and the city of Santa Cruz and these two mayors, three if you count Kennedy. I think Kennedy was removed from... His estate was removed, but the city was still responsible for him as a mayor and the decisions he made. But I'd like to see the ways in which city council proceeds changed so that there's a less repressive, less intimidating atmosphere if the council doesn't like you. This was, of course, transformed by the city attorney into my wanting a street free-for-all in the city council and my being a perennial disruptor and a whole series of fictions that, unfortunately... It looks like largely through assertion by the city attorney, this 8-person jury, at least 6 of them, bought it. 2 of them held out for quite a while, I understand, talking to the 2 attorneys who talked to the jurors afterward. But in the end, they were snowed by the other 6, and they went along with the verdict. But they said they didn't really believe it. Yeah, they were of the mind that I was... censored and expelled, and then when I wouldn't leave, arrested for my viewpoint. But this is something the other side didn't want to hear, and it is true that when we looked at this jury initially, it didn't look like a good jury. No one on the jury had any experience with protesting. They were all middle-class Silicon Valley professional-type folks. I think there was one exception to that. And apparently they were... Although I didn't see it, and my attorney didn't see it, they were hostile to me, 6 of them, from the get-go. And that's too bad. So those are some of the initial reactions. That's what happened yesterday. The jury went out on Wednesday. No, they went out on Tuesday. And they deliberated for a number of hours during the afternoon. And they came back on in the morning, and they sent a message to the judge asking for a definition, whether disruption had a more specific definition. And this was another reason that I think I may have lost in this to this jury. The judge, who had previously on 2 occasions even refused to take the case to the jury, insisting that it didn't have the merit of a case for different reasons, he was overruled twice by the higher courts, and eventually, 10 years later, I got into court in this jury trial. He gave the instruction that the mayors have broad discretion in how to run the meeting. But he did also, to his credit, this is Judge Ronald White, did say that it has to be content neutral, that a disruption cannot simply be a violation of the rules. It has to be something that stops the meeting in some way, substantial disruption. And this apparently... according to the 2 attorneys I talked to afterward, my 2 attorneys, David Beauvais and Kate Wells, was something that really was ignored by the jury. Which leads to the next chapter of this case, although, again, I tend to be gloomy about the prospects in these courts, whether they're local or federal. which is to appeal to the judge to overturn the verdict of the jury as not justified by the evidence, that there is so little or no evidence to support the verdict that it's contrary to the facts. And I believe that is what these two attorneys are going to ask Judge White to consider in the days ahead. And if he grants that, of course, there'll be a new jury. If he doesn't, there's a further appeal to a higher court, which I think is an unlikely appeal, although I don't know. I'm not really educated in the federal courts. It's depressing, you know, it's upsetting, it's chilling, really. But the higher courts have held and still hold that for something to be a disruption of a council meeting or a legislative body, it has to be something that not only violates the rules but actually impedes the meeting in the sense of stopping it. It has to be a real disruption. It can't just be, oh, you keep wearing your hat there, I'm afraid you're going to have to be arrested, like, you know, they sometimes say in court, although it's interesting in Linda LeMaster's case a couple days ago, they had Quakers who refused to take off their hats, and Judge Connolly didn't want to, I guess, get into a fight about that, so she said, fine. How big of her, you know? in any case, that basic ruling by the higher court still stands, even though a jury decided against me on this case, is my understanding. So, and I go back to the city council whenever that next visit is, and I don't usually make a mock Nazi salute. I mean, it's just, you know, it's something rather serious. If you did it a lot, it would become trite. I think it's only something to do when there is a real abuse of process that's happening. I did it on the two occasions I can remember I did it on, and maybe in a few others, but one was when activist Phil Baer, with whom I often disagree about immigration policy and use of the police and the drug war. He lives in the Beach Flats, and he's got views on those that are opposed to mine. He was ordered out of the chambers by, I believe it was then Mayor Fitzmaurice, the year before this incident happened to me. And I think I raised my arm in a mock Nazi salute at the back of the room, and Fitzmaurice ordered me out of the room for making that silent gesture at the back of the room, which no one could see. And the other time was this incident where Susan Zeman, which I've talked about on the air, which was the subject of the current trial, as a peace activist, had stood in line along with others to wait, had been essentially given the impression she could speak, and Mayor Crone cut the time short because he took up some of the time himself, refused to extend the time or asked it to be extended, and then threatened to have her ejected if she was asking the question, well, can't I speak? Why did they drag that other guy out before me? And my response was, again, this brief, silent, mock Nazi, don't act like a bunch of fascists salute. So you don't use it a lot. At least I don't use it a lot. I mean, it's much more effective to come up to the mic at another point and speak about it. And then, of course, you'll be called off topic because you're not talking about, you know, corn feed or the latest appropriation for first alarm security, patrolling the library for people sleeping in the library. I don't know that's actually what they're doing right now, though that's another issue I'm going to be bringing up today. And I did bring up at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which is the library. A board apparently is considering some nasty new regulations that essentially are targeting homeless people. And because of the attacks on homeless people in many places in the city, official attacks by the police that destroy their property, destroy their, I think, their health and well-being, and certainly their civil rights and human dignity, leaves people looking for shelter, places to go, and for example, tonight to come in out of the rain, and tomorrow it's due to be a rainy day all day, at least that was a weather report I saw. And this particular story in the Sentinel attracted my attention. Santa Cruz Library Board is planning some policy changes, which it postponed, perhaps because they were so harsh and because they were so controversial. According to the Sentinel story, and I haven't done more research, the proposed patron policy changes allows for staff to suspend someone for up to a year after a series of warnings. So apparently Mayor Kennedy's City Council decorum rules are invading the library, as one way of looking at it, although, of course, it's a different situation. Current rules allow only for a 30-day suspension, after which the next step was to seek a temporary restraining order. It means you've got to go to court and prove that this person really is, I don't know, crapping in the corner in the library or disturbing people a great deal or, you know, insisting on, I don't know, sexually harassing the people there. Whatever the reason is, whether they're homeless or not, library is one of the last sort of truly public benefits that are open during the day to people who are poor. You try to use the open spaces on Pacific Avenue, and the little Gestapo crusades come, you know, groups come down and inform you have to move on, inform you that you're sitting within 14 feet of a wall, so you're going to get a ticket, demand to check you for probation or parole or whatever, or just demand to see your ID for the hell of it. I mean, it's not a very comfortable and safe space. Same is becoming true with the parks. And certainly the levee is off bounds, and the Pogonip is. In other words, they're going to drive you grubby people out of here. And if you want to support them, you are going to get the same treatment as Occupy got, and as I and other homeless activists have gotten over the years. And, you know, that's not something that is right. It's obviously wrong, but it's something that's real, and you can either face it or you can try to avoid it. And I'm not saying that the evasion strategy, that's the name of a famous book at the Sub Rosa Cafe, Evasion, is a bad idea. Sometimes evasion is a very good idea. I've chosen to be less evasive and sort of more, what the fuck are you doing, and shine the flashlight on what's going on, raise my voice when I see it happening. I probably have the naive notion that somewhere down the line, some god in the sky, some judge on the bench, some city council person, some FBI investigation, some group of enraged citizens are going to stand up and say, yeah, yeah, he's right, when in fact no such thing is necessarily likely to happen at all. But I do think it empowers others to at least to think about these issues, and then often, well, I don't know how often, but to assert their rights on these occasions. And let me come up with some of the tapes I'm going to hopefully play today. And again, getting back to the Santa Cruz Library Board, which apparently met a few days ago, and they're going to be postponing till the December 5th meeting to get legal advice on a patron suspension policy. So what they're proposing is they want to suspend a patron not for a month, after which they would have to get a restraining order, but for 6 months or a year after a fourth violation of conduct rules. This sounds so much like Kennedy's city council policy. And I think actually Crone adopted a similar policy after my false arrest at city council back in March of 2012 or 22. There would be an appeal process. The changes will be used to ban the library for sleeping. So the sleeping ban is now all over the library, too. That's not meant to punish those who doze off while reading, but those who come to sleep for long periods of time. Sort of like, you know, we're not going to punish the protesters, but if you stay there too long, we'll call you a lodger and have you arrested and sentenced to 6 months in jail, as they're trying to do with Linda LeMaster. The new rules also empower staff to remove unattended items, such as backpacks. That sounds like almost a direct translation of the downtown ordinances, which are really an assault on the property of poor people. Who, if you can't store your stuff anywhere, you have to carry it with you. And if you have to go to the bathroom, you have to leave it while you're there in the custody of someone else. And police have been notorious. Some police and some rangers have just picking it up and not even storing it, but destroying it. In spite of the claims of Don Lane, our mayor, and Danette Shoemaker, the very highly paid boss of Parks and Rec. And I've gotten more testimony today from people that I'm hoping to play that they've lost their property and they're very upset about it. And the rules that are proposed for this December meeting of the library board have provisions for animals, dogs, or miniature horses. Well, haven't seen any miniature horses in the library, but that provide emotional support to patrons. Proposed rules would require staff to ask what kind of service or support the animal provides. And that's actually a violation of federal law. I don't know where they cooked that one up. Maybe that's why this whole thing is being delayed. It even was objected to by Santa Cruz County Supervisor Ellen Peary, saying it violates personal privacy. That it certainly does, but also my understanding is it violates federal law. But again, I haven't researched the most recent federal law. But when looking at this story on the internet, if you, there's a comment section, which is really filled with a lot of rancid comments often. But there's a guy who writes, all dogs registered as service dogs wear special license tags with ID number and phone number of the licensing agency. Asking for the service dog's ID number and county where registered is less invasive than asking what the service dog does for the person, is his proposal. The ID number can easily be checked by phone. People passing off pets as service animals is a problem. And again, there's no specification of what exactly the problem has been. I mean, have the dogs been poo-pooing in the library? Have they been biting the patrons? Are they scaring the children? Taking up too much space? Nothing specific in the story, just they're a problem. Similar to the kinds of vague accusations made to introduce the matrix of downtown ordinances used to criminalize homeless people on Pacific Avenue and throughout the town. Pet dogs, this supporter of this more restrictive policy, it sounds like, continues, often have inadequate training for comprehensive public access, so often misbehave under stress. Again, are there any examples of this that happen in the library? You know, let's hear the realities. I mean, if that's a real problem, let's get specific. The practice also undermines the credibility of people with hidden disabilities who have legitimate service dogs. So it's all okay. It all works together to prove it's okay to require extensive documentation of service dogs. It is a felony, is a federal offense to pass off as a pet a service dog, and the fine can be as high as $18,000. And however, Angela, that was Ray Gwynn Smith who writes that. However, Angelica Beresford responds, I don't think it is helpful to give out incorrect information. Federal law trumps local law. And then she gives us a website which states, talks about service animals. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, businesses and organizations that serve the public, like the library, must allow people with disabilities to bring their service animals into all areas of the facility where customers are normally allowed to go. This federal law applies to all businesses open to the public, including restaurants, hotels, taxis and shuttles, grocery and department stores, hospitals and medical offices, theaters, health clubs, parks and zoos, and presumably also libraries, I would add. And there's some more comments. Businesses may ask if an animal is a service animal or ask what tasks the animal has been trained to perform, but cannot require special ID cards for the animal or ask about the person's disability. So I guess they're trying to be careful and say, what is your service dog for? But the idea that you can't ask what disability the person has or require them to show the ID, as the previous commenter proposed, again, as some sort of a, that may be a state regulation. But again, that's for those who are unaware of their federal rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act. People with disabilities who use service animals cannot be charged extra fees, isolated from other patrons, or treated less favorably than other patrons. However, if a business such as a hotel normally charges guests for damage that they cause, a customer with a disability may be charged for damage caused by his or her service animal. A person with a disability cannot be asked to remove his service animal from the premises unless, one, the animal is out of control and the animal's owner does not take effective action to control it. If, for example, the dog barks repeatedly during a movie, or if the animal poses a direct threat to the health or safety of others. In these cases, the business should give the person with a disability the option to obtain goods and services without having the animal on the premises. Businesses that sell or prepare food must allow service animals in public areas, even if state or local health codes prohibit animals on the premises. A business is not required to provide care or food for a service animal or provide a special location. Allergies and fear of animals are generally not valid reasons for denying access or refusing service to people with service animals. Violators of these provisions can be required to pay money damages and penalties. This is a April 2002 ADA U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division statement, or at least that's what looks pretty official. I don't know. I have not gone into any deeper research. But that's coming up. This is, and then finally there's another proposal coming up at the Library Board in December. Another provision is going to be they want to update the language used in a flyer that they can hand to someone who has a strong odor, a piece of paper that on one side urges the person to leave and on the other provides information about free shower and laundry facilities that the homeless lack of services center, or what they call the homeless services center. The new language tells the person that odor is a violation of our rules of conduct, a point Landers said interferes with others' use of the library. And I guess Landers is... who is Landers? I don't see her full name, but she is referred to, in, or he, she or he is referred to in the story. Lander said there's been a major improvement in the atmosphere around the branch since the city hired private security guards to patrol the library and City Hall. People have been congregated outside, sleeping, smoking, or being loud. There have been problems, too, inside, including a man's staff caught disrobing in the stacks months ago. Again, using a very specific, dramatic, but rare incident to justify attacks on a whole class of people and a set of rules that makes it much more difficult for them to use the services. And so anyway, that's going to be coming up at a library board meeting. There is a, the agenda is posted on this. They do the roll call, they have to do oral communications. 6:30 is the public meeting, and it looks like that's in early December. December 5th is what it says. I'm not sure where it meets. Might be at the library itself. If I have more information on this, I will. Huff discussed this issue and was interested in looking into it further and conferring with both homeless people in the library and the library staff to find out what's going on here. I know, is this another scheme by the Coonerty Robinson? They're outgoing, actually. But you got the incoming Comstockery group, Pamela Comstock, Don Lane, and Cynthia Matthews. And also Micah Posner. Those are the four winners of the city council election on Tuesday. So I'm going to give a call to Linda LeMaster and see if she's in a talking mood. She might or might not be. Let's see what she if she's up for an update. She wasn't feeling well when I talked to her earlier. Said she has to continue with her trial, and I think her testimony tomorrow. She and two others are the defense witnesses against the two cops who claimed that she was lodging and gave her a ticket. And it may be she's...
Hi, it's Linda.
Yeah.
Leave me a message.
Sounds like she's not, you know, answering. I don't know exactly when her trial resumes. I'm going to take a look on IndieBay to see if I can get some information on that. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media, www.indiebay.org. And let's see if there's... Or let's see, also check my email to see if there's been anything new on the case. Looking it over, LeMaster trial closing. There is something new posted. 9:30 a.m. apparently is when the trial resumes tomorrow in dishonorable Judge Rebecca Connolly's courtroom. And witnesses and evidence are done being presented. Oh, really? Judge Connolly has given the jurors some dozen or so instructions specific to this crime and some general ones. The DA, Alex Byers, is well into his closing presentation and will finish first thing Friday. Then one of Linda's two attorneys, Jonathan Gettleman, will make their closing arguments. The judge says she hopes to cloister the jury before lunch. The trial is about a citation I got at Peace Camp. This is her writing, Linda LeMaster writing. 2010, August 9th, 9th and 10th. While I realize it's his job, it is hard, she writes, for me to swallow how the DA gets to call me a liar and I'm not permitted to reply. It is not even needed to show the elements of the crime of unlawful lodging as it is redefined this time. Got a bad headache from suppressed feelings. Boku gracias to the 16 supportive folks in the audience on Thursday. That's from Linda. And it's on Indie Bay again, 9:30 tomorrow morning for the continued inquisition of Linda LeMaster, who's a homeless activist and advocate who is facing 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for the crime of covering up with a blanket on the steps in order to help the sleeping Chris Doyen, or Curb Hugger Chris, as I used to call him, who was a main leader in the homeless protest of 2 years ago. The idea of them going after any of these protesters with these kinds of sentences and trials is really outrageous. It's just a kind of it's like a sort of a military drill they have to do because they use this as a tool of fear that they use to drive away the protest. and they have to carry it out, or else they it becomes obvious it was simply thuggery, and may even be punishable if somebody could find a lawyer to take the case to the higher courts and go through 10 years of this and that. Well, sometimes it's less. Usually it's less, actually. So it's it seems like something that they're doing to pander to a kind of bigotry against homeless people and against protesters and to frighten other protesters. I don't know what Bob Lee... I mean, Bob Lee is... seemed like a nice enough guy when I was in conversations with him years ago, though even then he didn't seem to know what his DAs, underling DAs, were doing. They were prosecuting people for selling marijuana in a dispensary under the theory that all dispensaries are illegal unless they are only servicing people who are a cooperative part of the growing and harvesting and caretakers cycle. And that's not true, as I'm sure many of you know, that, or at least it's certainly in major dispute, and it's not true in Santa Cruz. And Lee, I want to say gutless wonder that he is. That's not the right words, not the right phrase, Bob. The proper phrase is that he is he's a politician, like Cronin Sugar. Like Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, those are the three politicians elected a decade ago who we had all, many of us had hoped would be very liberal. And it was ironic that they were the ones that cracked down and prompted this lawsuit that I'm still hoping to see retried in the weeks ahead. So Linda's trial is concluding tomorrow. I would love to have her talk about it, but maybe on Sunday she'll be able to do that and feel well enough to do that. This is also an attack on a disabled woman. It's an attack on a poor disabled woman. It's an attack on a poor, courageous disabled woman. It is really despicable. And the worst thing about it is it's zombie-like. It doesn't have anything to do with somebody's getting very upset and angry at somebody else and slugging them or, you know, having some kind of emotional reaction. You can understand it's human. This is a cold-blooded, mechanistic, it's an appropriation of county and taxpayer resources to punish someone for exerting their rights in ways that embarrass the county, because they had to face the fact that they were not providing services for homeless people to sleep, and so the homeless people came and slept on the steps and used the porta-potty facilities for the provided by Ed Fry, who also was sentenced to 6 months in jail for this. I mean, this actually is far worse than anything that happened a decade ago when Santa Cruz was declared one of the, what is it, the 10, the 12 meanest cities in the country by the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty. And yet, it seems almost business as usual, which shows us how corrupt and how degraded even our standards of reference have become. It's just, it's chilling. I feel goosebumps as I sit here, actually. Let's have a brief musical break, and I'll be back. I want to remind you that you can call in 427-3772. Is the call-in number if you have comments about the election, particularly how it's impacting poor people here in Santa Cruz. If you have tales from the street that you want to pass on to the community, I want to hear them, and I think others who are listening probably do too. If you have some comment on anything I've said, feel free to call in. Any questions, please do. 427-3772, area code 831 for those of you who are in Milwaukee, 831-427-3772.
He's not here, he's not here, love, I know you know. Do you feel he's still real, love, it's just not so. Why is it you still believe, do you dream? Or do you grieve? You've got to let him go. He's been dead 16 years. No, my love, he's not here.
Who don't know?
Who
I am.
You don't know
who I am. You just don't know who I am.
Yeah, that was three more selections from Next to Normal. He's Not Here, You Don't Know, and I Am the One. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. You're in the middle of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's my twice-weekly show. I'm Robert Norse. If you want to call in, the number is 831-427-3772. 427-3772. Lines are open. A quick plug here. We are still underwater as far as our rent goes. Sounds like some kind of foreclosed situation, but... Our tenants, our landlords were the tenants who have been patient with us because we are a wild and crazy radio station, a pirate station, are not willing to lower the rent for us. At least as far as I know, they haven't been. We need a place we can rent for $300 a month. Otherwise, we go off the air or we try to broadcast in the rain on a bike cart or something, which can be done, but in a much more limited way, I understand. We're looking for a place that's near the downtown that has 24-hour access to a bathroom and to the studio, 150 square feet maybe. Be nice if utilities were included, perhaps not necessary. No parking tax. It has to be secure and dry. And we need help. If you have any information, any thoughts, any suggestions, you can leave them on the Huff line, 423-HUFF. That's my line, 423-4833, which is also the place to call. If you want to leave any off-air messages about this show, 423-4833. Or you can go to the Freak Radio website, freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org, and you'll find places there to leave a message, and also that's where you can catch this full schedule of the free radio broadcasters, as well as there's some archives, not so much of this show, but other shows, and there's places where you can donate. If you feel like donating money or equipment of any kind, we can use it. Probably. I'm not the techie guy here, but I think that's the case. Freakradio.org. If you want to get archives or hear archives of this show, older shows, you can by going to the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz .org, and it's all one word, all small letters. And then the name of the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, just click on it and you'll get to the archives. It's also a place to go if you don't know how to reach the stream of this show. The stream of this show is, you can get it through going to TuneIn, but the last, about a month or two ago when I tried to do that, it was more difficult. So instead I posted it on my the Huff website, on my website there. It's actually all our websites, so our Huffsters. And you can reach it through going to that place, too. There are other ways of reaching it, which other broadcasters will probably tell you about during their show time. Maybe Uncle Dennis, who follows my show and his musical show From the Cream to the Dregs, will have some tips for you on that. But that's a place to go if you want to reach this website. If you're, for example, in the car listening or at home at a radio and you're going to be going to an area, which is most of the world, where you can't hear this because it's a pretty weak signal, then you can go to huffsantacruz.org and click on the website there for this show, and you'll find that'll be the live website for Free Radio Santa Cruz. So, a couple of things. Measure S, the sit lie law in Berkeley, lost, thank God, although by a very narrow margin. I think it was 50 or 51% to 49%. That's a law that's even a little less harsh than the Santa Cruz sitting ban, as I call it. It's not a total ban. It is a very, very restrictive law. Well, in Santa Cruz, we have a very, very restrictive law that bans 95% of downtown and commercial district sidewalks from being sat on, which means actually anywhere along Soquel Avenue, anywhere along most of Mission Street where there are any buildings, anywhere along the boardwalk area, it is illegal to sit down. And what is a very natural thing to do if you're tired, particularly since they pulled out half the benches or more than half that used to be there, mandated by the earthquake restoration, which is how they justified this the whole concretization of the downtown. If you're an old-timer, you may remember the old sort of green Pacific Garden Mall that is no more. They took that one out with the claim there'd be plenty of places for people to sit down. If you want to purchase some wine or a nice expensive cafe latte, if you want to go to the areas of the sidewalk that have been privatized by the businesses. And, of course, that sometimes can be very pleasant, but it isn't something that should be a required for people either who live in the area or for poor people who come there or for people generally. It is a kind of a disgusting commercialization of the downtown area. But Measure S in Berkeley, the sitting band there, lost, although I find it, unfortunately, the guy who is running, who is a much better candidate than Mayor Bates, Chris Worthington, also lost by a much larger margin. And there was a suggestion of Berkeley Daily Planet writer, editor, an activist, Becky O'Malley, that the whole sitting band brouhaha was simply a campaign device to muster right-wing support for Berkeley Mayor Tom Bates. And I think that could well have been true. Don't know. Congratulations and hats off to Ed Fry. I believe a day or two ago, his ankle bracelet came off. Although I thought it had come off a week or two earlier, but that's the bracelet that requires you have to wear if you're under house arrest, which he was in a six-month jail sentence for having the temerity to show up the city and the county for the small-minded, vicious hypocrites that they are around the issue of both services and civil rights for homeless people. And I'm sorry, that includes Don Lane and the entire Homeless Lack of Services Center as well, based on my experiences with them in terms of the most elementary things like getting straight figures on how many people are sheltered and how do you deal with people who come to you and say, I got a ticket because I was trying to sleep. I got a ticket because I was covering up in my tent against the rain. I got a ticket and they stole all my stuff. Although I have heard from Steve Plaich, who's always giving me these rosy stories, and I'm hopeful that someday they may actually reflect reality, that Chris, the Homeless Lack of Services Center guy there, has actually written a letter or given out some kind of a receipt that either says, yes, you're on the waiting list, so don't give this guy a ticket because he'd be inside in a shelter and away from the offended eyes of the middle-class citizenry if only she or he could be, but we ain't got any space right now. He's on the waiting list, and it's not just a plea. There is actually a legal provision created by the city attorney to protect them from legal liability, such as was leveled against Los Angeles and threatened against San Diego and other cities for criminalizing people outside and prosecuting them for doing what they have to do, sleep at night. So it may be true that the Homeless Lack of Services Center is actually doing something, but Steve Plaich has not been able to make it down there to find out. He's been too busy campaigning for city council. And I guess, I should go there myself. Maybe I will tomorrow present myself at Chris's office and say, let's see the damn template, please. Let's see if you actually are giving these things out. How many of them have you given out? What's required to give them out? Just let me know and we can clear all this up. Because he was, his boss or one of his co-workers, Michael, was very effusive and friendly. And it seemed very genuine to me when we met at the Red Church's candidate forum, which was sponsored by Father Joel Miller about a month ago, and said, oh yeah, we'll give out those receipts, oh no problem, and if somebody is isn't even on the waiting list but they've got a ticket, we'll give a letter to the court saying there was no shelter, we'll do it. But then I get reports from people who go there and they don't do it, so it's frustrating to say the least. Gary Johnson, the activist who was also sentenced to 6 months in jail, is and has been out for probably about a month, I think. He has his own website, www.peacecamp2010insider.blogspot.com, if you want to reach him and see what he's writing about. Um, I'm looking over some of my notes to see if see what's cooking here. Oh, yeah. I did get a call from Janet. I was on KSCO, the large AM radio station that's very conservative, I might say even reactionary. And a lot of the folks there are, you know, they're big Romney supporters or further to the right. But they don't like people being treated like shit at the city council, probably because they might well imagine that might happen to them because they are at odds with the city council from the other end of the political spectrum. And so when I was on the air talking about this issue and I expected to be trashed, as I regularly am in the Santa Cruz Sentinel's comment sections, you can find that in the any of the last 4 days or 5 days when the Sentinel's actually had 3 or 4 articles in a row, pretty much one day after another, with a couple of gaps on the trial, the mock Nazi salute case there, right? What I call the false arrest by the two mayors cases. And I fully expected, as I've mentioned on the air before, to get trashed on the air, but instead I was very surprised. I was supported by everybody. They said, you're doing the right thing, right on, we hope you win your lawsuit. And I get the same thing from elderly people I never met in Scotts Valley and Felton and other places. I mean, also from homeless people who, you know, I'm more well known in Santa Cruz by some as someone who speaks up for homeless civil rights. So I was surprised at that, and I got a call from a woman named Janet who wants to talk about, and she may call in. I told her she should call any time between 6 and 8, and she may do that. She wants to talk about the fact that the Board of Supervisors destroys public comment minutes after 2 years, and I want her to kind of talk more about that and anything else she knows about the Board of Supervisors. Board of Supervisors, as most of you may know or may not, is the body that sort of is the city council for the county. It's a much more highly paid body. I guess the chair is John Leopold, the elder Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty's father, Neil Coonerty, both of them previously co-owners, and now who knows what relationship they have to the bookshop Coonerty, or bookshop Santa Cruz, as they call it. The board is has a lot of power. It meets every Tuesday, usually. I guess at 9 in the morning. Their oral communications period actually allows you to speak for 3 minutes, even if there's a long line, not just for half an hour's total time, and then they should cut you off. You may have to come back, though, at the end of the meeting, which can be difficult, I guess, for some people. I've spoken there probably a couple dozen times in the last 2 decades. Usually I don't go there. I don't have any experience or expertise there in terms of what they're doing. I kind of fancy myself a watchdog on some of these politicians who I'd like to create the illusion of being progressive without the substance and actually are doing the opposite. And you need to do this. You need to call people on this, and I'd like to see that happening. She's concerned about the Board of Supes losing accountability and transparency, and I think that's a very legitimate concern. I don't know a lot of the details of her concerns. I know I talked about a year ago about the Board of Supervisors doing nasty things to those who are trying to do things on their property, like build things. There's illegal behavior, actually, by the Board of Supervisors, or illegitimate behavior where they're supposed to have a board of permit appeals that will allow them to get past people who don't believe they're being treated fairly by the planning department, could go to a board of an appeals board, but the Board of Supervisors and the planning department apparently misinformed people about this. People never got to the board for a decade. Then when it became a matter of a scandal, they created the board, and the person who was chair of the board, Michael Bethke, who's a conservative guy who I am utterly at odds with on homeless issues and other issues, was so disgusted with how badly the Board of Supervisors treated this board that he resigned, and then the Board of Supervisors itself took over the board and declared itself the Board of Permit Appeals. And we discussed this a year and a half ago, I think. Claire Machado was on the air talking about this issue. So I'm going to play some tape. I've been talking for an hour. Now it's time for somebody else to talk. And since you folks aren't calling in, well, I'm just going to have to call out or have somebody else call out. So here we go.
is October
21st, Sunday. We're out here in front of New Leaf, listening to a man doing some strumming and singing.
When you hear the blues, a jumping, jumping rhythm make you feel so fine. It'll take out the troubles of your worry, my gear rhythm. When you hear the blues, well, I sat and listened to the true time boy, and I thought that I was gonna jump for joy. Slapped on the true collar, let him ride. He held his shine rag and he held his tie. Oh, stop once, wipe the sweat away. Said, you mind a little boy to please working that way. Said, I like it with a big white grin. He kept on popping and he said, look in good rhythm.
This guy has rhythm. We've been listening to the music of.
Yes, I hope so.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we're approaching the infamous change machine where we have resting dogs, sitting people, folks on benches. Any reports from the street, gentlemen?
And before we get to those reports, we have a live caller. Hey there, live caller.
I'm trying to stay away from the television or the computer screen so we don't have over echo or something.
It is echoey, but go ahead, caller. Is this dead on David Silva calling?
Dead on David Silva, and I think I am real dead on when I say, what in the is the matter with people not calling? Hey, these are really critical times, and a lot of important shit going down. I mean, you're a key voice in a whole quadrant of the revolution. My God, people need to be calling. This is ridiculous. We need to start comparing notes. Things are getting pretty bad. Everything's falling apart. Excuse me, where is everybody? Wake up.
Dead on, David. You were at the Linda LeMaster trial for some of the trial in the last few days, weren't you?
I was there for several hours. It was one of the most painful, you know, dead strangling killings of the Constitution I've ever seen. It was horrible, Robert.
Tell me, can you talk a little bit about it? Or is that possible? Or?
Yeah, I can talk about it now. My roommate was a witness, but now that they've done closing arguments, I now can talk about it. I couldn't have her here. Now I can. Hey, Becky, are you there? Do you know, Becky? This was just an incredible display of destruction of the Constitution and the stupidity and ignorance of the DAs. Excuse me. They have no idea what they're dealing with here. Oh, Robert, it was so disastrous. I made a list of all the motions that the judge denied. And even when she had approved him earlier, she was denying later when she thought the DA was pissed at her. It was disgraceful.
But what?
That judge, I kind of was, you know, at first I was thinking, well, you know, she's a woman, she's got some perspective. And then the more the decisions I saw for contradicting her own self, I said, oh, geez.
Let me interrupt and add that the person, that the judge in this case is Rebecca Connolly, who I understand let in a lot of destructive and perhaps even inappropriate prosecution stuff about other people around Linda, other campers, to try to sort of paint her as a part of this whole, some sort of evil activist movement, when in fact she was, you know, there's no evidence that she was there at any other time than this one night. What testimony did you see? Do you remember when you were in the courtroom?
Yes, we saw the same videos that you kept. They're so dark you can't see anything or anybody, that they're recognizing everybody. Like, excuse me, those cops are lying, the DAs are lying, the tenants are lying. Anyway, let's see, there were so many points made, Robert, I don't have my paperwork in front of me. Let me go see if I can find it. And hey, people, call in. There were some incredible important points made at that trial that, you know, definitely we have to take this all the way to the Supreme Court if we have to. God, if you still believe in America, this should be at the ready of the Supreme Court. My God, I can't believe a DA is allowed to.
Well, David, why don't you consult your notes, and if you feel like you want to, and it sounds like a very emotional issue for you, so I can understand if it's not something, you know, you're very mellow on.
It's a heartbreaking trial.
Yeah. Well, call back if you want, or is there more you'd like to say now?
No, for now, I think we'll go check my notes. I took really good notes.
Well, you know, of course, if Becky wants to talk, the microphone is here.
Sure thing. Sure thing, Uncle Robert.
All right, then.
I'm losing you on my cell phone, too. I'm going to get a better location.
Talk to you later. And thank you, David, for calling in. It's always nice to know that not only is somebody listening, but apparently somebody is responding, which is it's good. I like that. All right, let's hear some more from the streets. This was, I guess, a week or two ago in October.
We have a negative view of our Parks and Rec Rangers. Your name, sir?
It's Kurt, medic.
And what has led you to your, should we say, somewhat negative view of the Rangers?
Well, after having nowhere to really go in camp, then they come on and clean out my stuff. They took everything. And they waited for me to leave at a particular time, so I was gone for a couple of hours. Come back, and upon my return, I had zero left.
When was this?
It was about a month ago.
And where was this?
The Sycamore Grove.
And were you alone, or were you had other companions with you?
I had a girl with me, and then she lost her stuff as well. My neighbor, though, they left her stuff with her alone. So I felt like they were kind of picking on us based on that. They came by before and talked to us. It's been about a month, though, and they just swooped in at one convenient time, and they cleaned us out.
Did they give you a receipt for your stuff?
Oh, not at all. They took and kept everything.
How do we know it was the Rangers, not some pack of scavenging homeless people?
Based on that, when I was leaving the campsite and got to the edge of the road, they were pulling up, and they'd warned me they were coming before, and I should have known better than to leave right then and there, but I didn't think they were going to. I thought they'd come in with a crew, but they came in with a couple of city guys. The city guys came in, and they cleaned me out. Took everything.
Has this happened to you before?
That'd be the first time that happened.
And how long have you been outside?
On and off about 8 years now.
And how would you compare the situation this year with in previous years?
They're getting nasty this year. It's pretty, they've been bad before in the summertime during the turkey season, but this year they've been especially nasty with this eradication business they've been going through.
Have you gotten any citations?
Yeah, I've got three so far.
For?
Camping, all camping.
And have you tried to use the waiting list defense that if you're on the waiting list, your tickets are dismissed?
I was on the list, and I don't know if it got followed up or not. I never went to the courthouse on it. So. But I was on the waiting list when I got the tickets.
How long ago did you get the tickets?
It's been a period of the last couple of months.
Keep me advised. Let me give you a card in case you want to waste 50 cents on a phone call.
They give us free calls out there occasionally. A lot we do get a free phone call.
Okay, that's at the homeless lack of services.
Exactly. Yeah, I was listening to the Saturday special. On Saturday, I listened to the Saturday special.
Oh, what'd you think?
I think Wattenberg's more of an ass than I thought he was.
Yeah, I've always had that impression, unfortunately.
He seems like a smart guy, but sometimes he comes up with a short end of things, you know?
He was described by a member of the staff as a bully.
Yeah, intellectual bully.
We're talking about Bill Wattenberg, who was one of the callers that they sort of poised against me as a conservative in my discussion of the trial against the two mayors. And Wattenberg, surprisingly, ended up being very, he was proposing suggestions for homeless folks and that weren't unreasonable. And he kind of agreed he wasn't really knowledgeable in the situation, though he'd started by being a big decorum freak. We got a caller. You are on Free Radio with Robert.
Yes, Coral Reeves. Trying to continue that call that David made.
Oh, hi,
really,
Coral.
I don't have David's notes, but I'm right there with Becky and David.
So weren't you, Coral, I know you, Chris, you're a Free Radio broadcaster. You have your Tuesday show from 6 to 9.
But we're 2 days later, and I was at the Linda LeMaster trial.
Right, which is, I think something I really want to hear about. You were also a potential witness, right?
I was potentially a witness. We were held back, and we were excluded, but we did hang in there.
You were told because your witnesses, you weren't allowed to go into the courtroom, but did the defense ever call you?
No, they didn't.
There you go.
We listened to the closing statement that the prosecution tried to portray Linda as having been in the dark, vile organizer of many heinous deeds that we couldn't tell who was committing at 4:30 in the morning, and my name was used quite a bit.
So as I understand, your name was used quite a bit, you say?
Yeah, he used my name to show that I had some part in it, but I didn't have a chance to defend myself or even speak about it.
And so the only witness for the the witnesses for the prosecution were the Lieutenant Plagueman and then this officer who gave Linda the citation for lodging. But
the woman officer was named, what's it, get her name right. But there were three officers.
So the third, there was a
Parks and Rec person.
There was a third officer, yeah. What about the defense? Was anybody other than Linda LeMaster called for the defense?
She was the only defense.
Wow, that's a peculiar strategy. What was the strategy of the defense? I understand they were going to try to claim that it was a necessity for her to be there. Is that what they used? Or?
You know, because we were left out in the exclusion zone, we weren't told, but tomorrow they're going to have the wrap-up and they're going to have final closing statements on both sides.
And I guess that's at 9:30 in the morning?
It is, yeah.
In Department 1. Your show on Tuesday, did it cover any of these issues at all? I often miss your show, and then I regret that I haven't listened to it. What did you guys talk about?
Last Tuesday was about mostly the election, and nothing about Linda.
Anything about homeless civil rights or local violations of people's rights here?
No.
Okay. Well, I regard the elections as being a general violation of everybody's rights, but that's another story. Masquerading as, the implementation of people's rights. So, you waited out there in the hallway to speak as a witness. What would you have said if you had been able to speak in the courtroom? It's not going to matter now because the testimony...
Well, you know, I was given four questions that were going to be asked to me if I was up there and having a chance to express myself, how I've known Linda, how long, and what did I see her do, and why was she there, and what possessions did she have with her. So basically just real basic stuff like that. And
well, let me ask you those four questions. How long have you known Linda?
Oh, a little over 10 years. And, you know, it's probably more, but I've known about her longer.
Mm-hmm. And what was the second question?
She's a homeless advocate.
She is a homeless advocate, you say?
You know Linda.
Of course I do,
you know,
but I'm asking you the question. I'm asking. I'm asking you the question.
Involved in a lot of local projects.
Yeah, I'm asking you the question the way Linda, the defense attorney would ask you the question. So, what was the second question that he would have asked you?
Oh, he wanted to know what she had with her that night.
What she what? Say
what
that again.
What was she doing there? Why was she there? Or what did she have with her? I don't know which order it was.
Okay, why was she there that night, Ms. Brune?
She was there and she was watching over Chris Doyen. I saw her. I was 5 feet away from her. I was sitting there. She was sitting because she was concerned about his condition. Obviously, I could tell that he had a medical emergency. He was coughing and hacking. He was very weak, and he was very shallow breathing. You know, respiratory problems, and he refused to go get treatment. And he needed somebody to watch him. And she was concerned about his condition. Said he could have died not having anybody look after him. So she was sitting right there, 5 feet away.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to ask you questions that the prosecution didn't ask. I probably asked these questions 2 years ago because I probably covered this on the air when it was happening or shortly after it was happening. But what actually happened to Chris Doyen? Did he get arrested? Did he get ticketed? Do we know what happened to him?
He got a ticket. She wanted to stay until she knew what was going to happen with him, and that's the primary reason she stayed there.
But didn't she...
He did get a citation. He was given a... warning, and then he was given a citation for lodging in 647E.
I'm going to skip to another question before we get to the questions they were going to ask you. I understand Linda left after she was given this citation and told she didn't have an option that she could stay and, sit on the steps with a sign, which you would think would be someone's right to do as a member of the public, but that she had to leave, although that point was not really very clearly brought out by the attorney at the trial, and I hope it got to the jury anyway. But did Christopher Doyen also receive this warning, and did he also leave?
He was put in the squad car, and he was held down below. Arrested.
So he was arrested. So he was arrested. Maybe he was. Do you know if he was he taken to the hospital? Do you recall? I don't recall if he was actually, or was he?
I don't recall either.
Huh. I know that soon after he returned, some days later, or maybe even that next day, or maybe even that night, and he continued to do his to be a protester at City Hall when they moved the campsite. That's the protest.
I don't know when they switched it over, but they did move the camp to City Hall.
You know, we use the words camp, and there's some truth to that, but it's also they took really, I think, strong precautions to make sure nobody's access was blocked during the day. When people came in and out, there was a sort of an elaborate charade going on during the part of the trial that I saw where Lieutenant Plagman was saying, well, yeah, but there might have been people late at night who needed to get in through an emergency crew. And of course, you know, we didn't have I don't recall Jonathan Gettleman or the other defense attorney ever asking, did that ever happen? Were they ever blocked? And I think one of the reasons we had a very timid defense attorney there. This is my impression of Gettleman, who, you know, defense attorneys are wary of asking questions they don't know the answer to. And I think that was the reason that he didn't answer. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think some of the bathrooms that sheriff made sure were unlocked down below. People told me that they could go use them.
So actually, are you saying the sheriffs were helpful in actually unlocking bathrooms for the homeless at night?
Yeah, there were some of that.
Well, good
for
them. Good for them.
Early in the morning or some part of the day, I know. Maybe it was during the day. I don't know. Some part was before 8 o'clock in the morning, though.
Well, the bathrooms, of course, are open during the day at the county building, although there was an attempt to close them to the Occupy people the next year as part of a...
I know, but it had nothing to do with that. That's 2 years prior.
I'm seeing this as all as being part of a continuum of how the county likes to repress protests and takes, you know, these attitudes toward people...
Now they like to paint it later and portray it as totally unconstitutional and nothing to do with the Constitution. Well, okay, well, then why are they bringing it up? Because that's all they were talking about is reconstructing the definition of what the written, unsigned, or unreferred to.
Are you talking about?
So
wait a minute. Let me go back here, Coral. This is one of the key issues in the trial, which is what is the definition of lodging? Because the law says, you know, it shall be illegal to lodge in any place without the permission of the owner or possessor of the property, whatever legitimate authority. But there is no definition of the word lodging. And indeed, there was a court decision by Judge Maragonda that specified that sleeping in and of itself cannot be considered to be lodging. So what was the definition used by Judge Connolly? Was this very sort of, very extroverted and friendly and, you know, hey, buddy, buddy kind of judge who actually was buddy, buddy with the prosecution while appearing to be buddy, buddy with everyone. But her rulings seemed to be, you know, frequently to favor the prosecution, even to the point of not allowing the defense to do sidebars, which are areas where the defense comes up and kind of whispers with the prosecution or the judge about a legal issue. I've never seen that before. I've never seen a judge barring sidebars, not allowing the two attorneys to come up and talk to him. It's interesting. But what was the definition of lodging? Do you know that Judge Connolly had?
Well, they had Alex Byers' definition. It could be lodging. It didn't have to be sleep. It could be sleep. Just some kind of intention to settle in or just be there for a while and may or may not have bedding.
So are you saying it was a very broad definition that would allow a jury or a prosecutor to say she's lodging for all kinds of different reasons, when lodging usually means taking up residence in a place for a relatively not lengthy but certainly an extended period of time? It doesn't mean sitting there for an hour. It doesn't even mean necessarily falling asleep in a place, but it can mean trying to establish a lodge there of some kind, you know, in a sense. So I mean, that's my understanding of the word, but did they broaden that definition so that people who were protesting but not lodging could, in fact, be convicted of lodging?
He claimed that the person taking photos and videos of everybody waking up, alerting them that the popo was there, was not a lodger because he was awake and walking around.
Mm-hmm.
But Linda LeMaster certainly was a lodger because obviously, she had bedding all around her. sitting up, but being awake and had things that looked like that people would use when they sleep. They were including everybody else's sleeping bags and blankets, even though they weren't there anymore. And obviously, she was intending to sleep, and she had been asleep. So this is obviously lodging because she's there among all this. On and on.
So, you know,
it was in the dark, and then it showed.
It seems to me, you know, that what we had, it seems to me that what we had here was a situation where the police knew that they might be considered to be violating people's rights if they simply came in and said, you can't protest. And so what they wanted to do was they wanted to claim people were lodging. It seemed to me if they really wanted to do this in a fair way, they would have to get evidence that certain people were there for a number of days and nights and that they stayed there. And on a relatively continuous basis and made their residence there in some sense. And that they did not do. Instead, they had this unusual procedure where they came in and said, well, here's your warning. This is the lodging law, which doesn't define lodging. And then we came back an hour later and we say, well, are you going to leave or are you going to get a lodging ticket? And that means that we're not going to give you the opportunity to engage in normal protest activity here. We will consider you a lodger if we have selected you. Now, they said they only selected people that they gave the second warning to, the warning that we're going to give you a ticket right now unless you leave, if they appeared to be sleeping or covered up with bedding. But that's not sufficient in my mind to establish lodging. And also, the guy that's walking around with a camera might well be a lodger. You know, I mean, the fact that he's standing up and taking pictures doesn't mean he isn't a lodger. It certainly doesn't mean he is either. And the fact that Linda's lying down under a blanket doesn't mean she's a lodger either. This is a definition created to fit a jacket for protesters that they want to take to court and that they want to punish. That's my impression. What do you think of that?
Yeah. They also said that it didn't matter if you're protesting or not. If you were sitting down and had an intention to be there for a while, maybe you were a lodger.
You know, I mean, if that's true, then people doing that during the day, someone who sits there during the day with a blanket is a lodger. And, you know,
even if they didn't have a knowledge or intention, they were still a lodger.
You know, I mean, it seems to me that if you were sitting there during the day with a blanket, you know, I mean, let's. They also claimed. Sorry, we're talking over each other, but the fact. Hang on. Can you still hear me, Coral? Hello? Are you still there? Okay, well, thanks for calling in. It seems to me that another thing that the prosecution was using was a lot of evidence of other people's bedding and so forth. And some people might say to me, well, look, they were camping. I didn't even use the word campsite to describe, you know, what was going on. And then I corrected myself because it wasn't a 24-hour campsite. It was for some people did stay there over a long period of time, and they might be considered lodgers. But, of course, then the question arises, were they damaging the property? Is there any really a procedure for people to lodge? Is there any legal place for them to go? Was any effort made by authorities to establish some kind of a legal sleeping area? Because people came there to be protected often. They came there because there was a 24-hour porta-potty there. And it's kind of really disgusting how the prosecution turned this on its head and said, well, at times, didn't that porta-potty stink? Wasn't it a health problem? Although they never got any kind of ruling from the health department that it was. Just an attempt to use the feces and poo-poo and it's a mess kind of thing to misdefine and really characterize in a negative way something that was a very positive protest. And it certainly had its uneven side. There were some wild and crazy people there, too. There was a one hoarder guy who just got huge amounts of stuff. And it would have been completely appropriate for police to go after any particular individual who was creating a problem. But no, that wasn't their objective. Their objective was to disperse the entire protest. And there seems to be their objective in this case with LeMaster is to eliminate the prospect of future protests. I'm not inside their heads, but it seems to me to use this kind of firepower, spend tens of thousands of dollars on jury trials and court time, prosecution time, displays of photos and deputy time to punish this one person is an attempt to send out a message to the entire community that we'll get you if you do something as simple as go and sit at 4 o'clock in the morning to take care of a person who's ill, or even to be present to observe what's going on. Just as they're going after the Santa Cruz 11, some of us, for coming in to report on what went down. For being present in a building is our crime. Even though there's no evidence we were warned that this was criminal, and that there's evidence that city officials were in the building without any permission, and that they weren't warned, or there's evidence of... This is, of course, coming up in January, the Santa Cruz 11 case. So it's an attack on basic rights. It's an attack on people who are raising issues that the city and county officials do not want to hear, challenging the authority of sheriffs and police who need to have their authority in these situations, not just challenged, but dissolved. They do not have authority in these situations. They have authorities in situations where the genuine health and safety of the community is at stake, and where they are authorized by law to deal with these issues. And this is not the case in the most recent protests, and it's not the case, certainly, in the Linda LeMaster trial. So maybe we can get more from folks later. And I do appreciate you, Coral, for calling in. I'm sorry that I really wanted to get out a lot of the issues. Part of the problem is that your line, the incoming line that Coral was on, is kind of hard to hear, and I was afraid a lot of what she was saying was sounding a bit garbled. Hopefully she'll be able to bring up these issues on her show on Tuesday, which, as I said, is from 6 to 9. She and Free do a show that is really, the times I've heard it, I've enjoyed it, and I recommend you listen in. I think there's some archived parts of that show. Let's go back to some street interviews, and I'll remind you, if you want to call in, you can, 427-3772, 427-FRSC.
And a lot of stuff that he comes up with, I think that it's like a conventional wisdom, but I'm not sure that it's...
Conventional ignorance.
Yeah, conventional ignorance.
We're talking about Bill Wattenberg, who's a used to be conservative talk show host on KGO Radio. Now he's an occasional caller and I think a regular host on KSCO, the local right-wing radio station that I was given a two-hour spot on with Michael Zwirling on the Saturday special, which you can still hear if you want to go back and listen to the discussion of the mock Nazi salute case, the two mayors case. All right, another caller. Let's see what's cooking. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi, Robert. This is Dave. I used to go to some Huff meetings.
Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Okay, well, that's a big deal. But what I was wondering about was about the Huff line, because I attempted to call 423 Huff a few days ago just to see if it was still going on, maybe to get some information. But I thought that it had been disconnected.
No. It's, as far as I know, I've gotten calls there today. So try again this evening after you've talked to me and see if you can get through.
Okay.
And let me know. You can call back the show. I'll be on for another half hour if there's a problem. 423-4833 is the Homeless United line, and it's, you know, available for people who want to talk about stuff on the show or want to volunteer for civil rights stuff or so forth. Yeah, and David, you're welcome. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's just good to know. I mean, because I've been homeless, and I mean, you know, that one time I talked to a man who had been in sort of a sticky situation, and he said, well, I called Huff, and then these people he was dealing with said, oh, he's political, you know, so I just thought that was good to know about, so it's good to network and whatnot, so I'll try and call that again.
I'm sorry, what do you mean? Can you clarify what you just said? I'm not quite sure I understood that.
It's just sort of an anecdote about somebody who called the Huff line, and I don't really want to share his name because
What about it? When he called the Huff line, he commented it was political?
Well, yeah, that's what happened. He was sort of like taken into custody by the police or something like that, and then he was taken, you know, kind of over to some place, you know, where he was being questioned and whatnot. And they said, well, you can make a call. And he said, okay, I'll call this Huff line. And so he called Huff, and I guess he must have answered. And then they looked at him again, and they said, oh, we really don't want to, you know, deal with all this because, you know, he's sort of got, like, a network to deal with and things like that. So, you know, so they just kind of...
The police told him that he shouldn't call that number, or?
No, it was to his favor, because he had, he had people to talk to. You know, he wasn't just an isolated individual. He was part of an organization, and they didn't want to deal with that.
Who didn't want to deal with that?
The authorities.
And why would they be related to his phone call? What was the problem there?
Well, without being too specific, I mean, because, you know, I haven't seen him for a while, and I don't just want to say.
I mean, I'm just wondering. So he wanted to put through a call to let people know he was in jail, or what was it?
Yeah, you know, you get.
And they didn't try to stop him, but they just criticized the organization.
Generally, police don't.
Yeah, I mean, they don't. They don't enjoy my commentary on the streets when I see them if they're doing something that I consider inappropriate. I'm pretty outspoken about that, as you probably know. So. I mean,
yeah.
I don't hold that against them if they have that you know, distaste for what I do. I mean, if any, you know,
it's United. It's almost United for Friendship and Freedom. It's like SNCC, you know, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. You know, once you have, of course, it's a little bit different because the dynamics are a little bit different, but it's an NGO, you know, and it's an activist organization. So, I mean, you know, rather than one person go in and say, you know, I just, you know, was messing around on the street, it's more like, well, you know, I'm here, I'm not alone, you know, I mean, you know, what's happening is a type of discrimination. I mean, so, you know, come on, you know, so he by being organized, he was able to get out of you know, he didn't have to be stuck in a holding cell or something like that. They said, all right, John, you know, we understand, you know, we're sorry that we got in your way and you got into this pickle, you know. And they said, all right, we'll let you you know, you can go back out, but please don't don't be there at 2 a.m. acting foolish, you know. So they just, that time he got away with it. But, I mean, generally, you know, you can have a problem if you continue going again and again. And, like, I mean, you know, in my case, you know, I haven't tried to take advantage of the fact that I didn't have a place to stay. You know, I mean, I basically was stuck, you know, and so I stayed outside a few times, but I didn't try to, you know, say, well, it's my right to be here. I kept my head down, you know, and so I call Huff, you know, and I'd be happy to call it again. So I'll try that, and I'll call you back and tell you if it works, if I just get the answering machine, okay?
Thank you, David.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, not certainly SNCC is... It's a much vaster and more powerful organization than Huff was, and far more effective in creating a real change in terms of ending the civil rights discrimination in some areas for black people, African-American folks. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772. 427-3772. Back to interviews on the street from mid-October.
Not sure if it's the exact way that this is going to it's going to work out. His idea behind nuclear and stuff like that is all safe and everything. It's only safe as people operate it. Yeah. You know.
Well, I know you listened to the show yesterday or
Saturday, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say. The one where I and Wattenberg were facing off.
Yep, I did hear that one. And you came across good, though. I liked that. It was a good show.
Is there anything you thought that should have been said that wasn't said that you would like to have said?
I think I'd like to see more about why they can't set us up a place to be. Somewhere to be. Somewhere that we can actually just be somewhere and not be bothered. There should be an area that designated for the campers that we could go to, that they could police, but still give us somewhere at least we can be without being harassed or losing our stuff, and also have us an opportunity to get our stuff back. When they take our stuff from us, we should have an opportunity to get it back from the authorities.
Well, it's illegal for them to do it. They are actually committing, they're actually engaging in theft when they do that. I mean, it's been held by two federal courts, one in Fresno, one more recently in Los Angeles, that they have to I mean, it's unconstitutional because they're, you know, they're denying you your property without due process. But it's also a violation of state law, which says, I think, 60 to 90 days you have to be, have to hold it in storage and let you know.
They took it straight to the dump. They said that, they told us that when we asked them where it was, they said they underlined it three times on the sheet where we could get it, and that was the disposed of part. They're being pretty smart.
Copy of that disposal notice?
I'd have to look and see if I still have it or not. I doubt it.
If you do, or if you can find another one, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, okay. I'll look and see if I can find it.
We've been talking with...
How's that?
What's your name again?
Kurt. Kurt Medeke.
Thanks, Kurt. All right, we have a pub.
And before we get into the next caller, if anybody does have this kind of a sheet which claims the property is disposed of or gives an address where people can allegedly find their property, they've gone there and they found it ain't there, because that's the repeated story I'm getting from different people. Please give me a call, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let me know. I'll come to a HUFF meeting Wednesday, 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 10 in the morning. Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific Avenue. Free coffee. Come and drink it. And we'll talk and check over what you've got. Or just grab me on the streets. I'm the guy in the car with all the bumper stickers. There are a couple of them, but you're a pretty good chance you'll be running into me if you happen to see such a car. Flag me down. And again, you can call the HUFF line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Call in line for this show, if you want to call in now, and you got about 20 minutes left, is 427-3772.
Tip report from Uncle Bar. Hey, Bar.
Hey, this is the one and only Uncle Bar here at Bar and Grill downtown near the Gap. I'm just saying that we have a pretty good report. I was talking to the police officer a couple of days ago about a harassing person into my personal space, kind of like passive-aggressive type thing. You know what I mean? Could get potentially dangerous. So I did the right thing. Instead of taking it into my own hand, I talked to a police officer about solving this. So he got back to me a couple hours later and said he talked to him, and the guy said, I'm much calmed down now, and I'll keep my personal space and go across the street when I see him and treat him like the man and OG that he is. Street Report Bar out, baby. Loving you.
Thank you.
Having fun.
Thank you. Renee has a favorable report of the Saturday special.
Did you see my Facebook post about you?
I did. I saw numerous Facebook posts by you.
I know. You didn't respond. I don't know if you heard it.
I think I thanked you and one and gave you a link, but I'm not much of a Facebook guy, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, I just didn't know if you got it.
Anything
yes.
you think that should have been said?
I was so impressed.
Not really.
Anything
no.
that needed to be said, do you think that you would have said yourself?
Well, I would have called that guy on calling our homeless a bum. I didn't like that. That upset me.
Paul Pat.
Yeah.
Population Pat, he called.
Yeah. And then also, I think that genius guy, Bill Wattenberg, that has all the answers, I just feel like he doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. Like, if he has all the answers, then he should get down here with his answers and his money and help do something. Yeah.
You're a hard task, Mistress Renee.
I
see you have a happy birthday cake here. What's happening today?
It's Marcel's birthday, but he might have missed us because we're like an hour late.
An hour late?
I'm a hard taskmaster? Made me mad.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, all right. You're being tongue-in-cheek.
I am being hyperbolic, as they say.
Tell him how good he did.
Yes,
I'm
rounding up compliments for the Saturday special.
I can't tell you how
October
23. You turn the tape recorder off.
yes. Oh, there you have it.
I was like, Robert's going to get himself in trouble. What's he going to do?
Good job.
And those guys just looked.
Yeah, I thought I was amazed.
Professional compared to you. You did.
Well, thank you so much. So we talk longer, but Renee is an hour late for lunch here in front of the Forever 21, a standard Sunday meal, usually at noon, and now it's 2, so I guess maybe it's 2 hours late at night. Any street reports?
Things are going good for me.
Did you want to get a burrito?
Yeah. I still stand on the street, but I get paid for it now.
That's good.
Holding the stop sign. And the head of the homeless services center for...
Lack of services center, as I call it.
As you call it. She actually helped me get that job.
Oh, good for her then. And that was up. I'll have to give her some kind of commendation.
Through labor ready, but she put in a word for me, and all I had to do was go down there, pick up a time slip, and now I'm working.
Oh, good for her. Thank you, Monica Martinez.
That Well, that was Shelley, actually.
Ah, thank you. Shelley Underling of Monica Martinez.
So I just started staying at the loft again. It's the 30-day stay. And then
how is life at the loft?
It's still the typical, like, riffraff. Every morning we get woken up by someone that has to complain about something, but, you know, it's better than sleeping in the woods or on a sidewalk. Or
are many people excluded from the poly loft?
Well, yeah, if you're breaking rules and, you know, there's people that'll get kicked off, but, that, you know, within a certain amount of time, they can usually be let back in the place. But
have you been treated?
I've been treated pretty fairly. It's pretty easy to, like I say, follow the rules and get on the waiting list. And, you know, if you're patient enough, things can work out for you. But, you know.
Have you gotten any tickets, camping tickets?
I have not. I did have a camp up the tracks, and I came upon some rangers, and it's somebody's birthday. Happy birthday to you. Yeah, I got a notice to leave the camp. They give you like a couple days, and I was able to get my camp out of there before they came and swooped everything up. So I was lucky. It would have been a ticket, but they were pretty lenient.
We've been talking with
this. Two park rangers I came up on, and I told them that I just exited River Street and I needed a place to put my stuff, which basically means I had a tent and I had to camp, and it was only one night, but they put a notice on my tent, giving me 3 days when they were going to be back, and I made sure I got my stuff out of there. Otherwise, it could have resorted in a ticket, and all my stuff being gone. I don't need that.
I hear you. And your name is?
I'm Devin.
Thank you, Devin.
And of course, that would be illegal if that's what they were threatening with, taking and destroying his stuff. The ticketing would not be illegal. It would be, of course, unconstitutional, but it wouldn't be illegal because it's part of the law in Santa Cruz. But to destroy people's stuff that you're taking, even as you give them a ticket or come upon their campsite, even if you write a little sign that says, we're going to do this in 3 days, that's still not legal. You're supposed to save and sequester unaccompanied property, supposedly abandoned property, if it has any value, so it can be picked up. And obviously, if they're talking to the owner of the property, who's in these kinds of circumstances, they are aware that it has that kind of value, and they are not heeding that fact. People are being treated like less than full citizens, less than full human beings. We do have another caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello.
Oh, hi. It's David R.
Hey, David.
I just wanted to say, hey, seems like the 423-4833 seems to work. I did try to call it. I had a question recently, but
The question?
It didn't work, so.
What's the question? Or have you already gotten that resolved?
Well, actually, I'm not sure. I'm sure it was something perhaps about the city council race or a bike trail or.
Okay, well, if it comes up again, David, just, you know, give me a call and I will try to call back. Leave your number, though, and that's what I would always urge people to do if they have a return number or a place where you can be reached. Or, you know, I advise people to come to the Huff meeting on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa in the morning. So.
Uh-huh. Okay, all right, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Bye.
So, more from, well, either the street or perhaps the interior of the Red Church. I guess this was from the street in front of the Forever 21 place at Soquel and Pacific at the Sunday meal a couple of weeks ago that Rene Curry does every Sunday starting around noon, I think.
Welcome.
There's a whole variety of merchants, jewelers, and so forth in front of the Palomar. We have a count of 1, 2, 3 jewelers and one artist. How's the business coming with the... what have we got here? Tell me.
Oh, this is local hand-carved jade.
And have you had any flack from the guardians of the law?
No, not at all, actually. It seems like their attitude has totally shifted towards more of appreciation.
Really? And,
yeah. I've noticed it, like, really chillax. Since, like, the past few years, it was really, really strict. And they were very, very, like, anti-artisan, you know. And I've noticed a little bit of a shift lately, yeah.
How often have you been out here now?
I'm out here, periodically, I would say like 3 or 4 times a week usually.
And have you ever gotten told to move or cited?
Yeah.
Recently?
No.
I want you to keep your eyes open.
Right, yeah, I try.
And we're talking with...
Oh, my name is Hala.
Thank you, Hala.
All right.
We're talking with...
Celestino Rodriguez.
And...
I'm Elsie Thomas.
And the two of you are out here in front of a Palomar with a selection of jewelry, handmade jewelry, it says. And you say that you were told by the police you could not ask for anything other than donations?
That is correct. But we couldn't get any profit. The money that we make, that goes into the jewelry, we try and make that money back, and it's not going to work if we sell it at a lower price.
What is, I see numerous earrings here with different stones and several necklaces. What's the time and money put into one of these, would you say?
Well, that would most likely be a good question for Elsie here.
Sorry, Elsie, you are the artist here.
Yeah, I handmade all this myself, and most of it is in the time in collecting the beads, and I go to various, you know, antique fairs and places and collect beads and get the materials to make it. So I think most of it's in the time. And then I also spent quite a few hours making them all.
So the average time, say, for a pair of earrings would be?
It really depends. Sometimes it takes me a while for an idea to come. So, you know, maybe 20 minutes, or it really depends.
And you have to add to that the time procuring the beads?
Yeah, the time for finding the beads and the materials.
You have a potential customer here. A little violin action here. Thank you. And he's playing for money, and he seems to be making more than the jeweler. And yet another jeweler in front of Sway. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
How's it going for free radio here? What, your jewelry for donation or for show or for sale? What's going on?
These are handcrafted jewelry that I make myself. And they're all one-of-a-kind pieces. I use pearls, crystals. This one's Herkimer diamond out of India.
Wow. High class looking.
Thank you. Yeah, it's excellent value. This bracelet, for example, is only $65, which is pretty much my cost of materials.
How long does it take you? I was just speaking to another jeweler up the way to make one of these.
Well, this particular piece, because feel the weight of the Herkimer diamond, you have to use a 59-strand sterling core, and it has to be triple-bound along the way and on the when I close it off. That way, on impact, it doesn't break with the weight, right? And also, bracelets are surprisingly... they must be surprisingly durable because I had no clue how much beading bracelets take. Much more of a beading than any necklace or earring.
How long have you been doing this?
3 years.
And what kind of work were you doing before this?
Well, I'm a realtor, but I had broken my shoulders 2 years ago, and I was unable to work at all. And so my hands didn't work very well, and I started making jewelry to get better control of my hands, and I just love it, and I keep making it, and I sell a lot of jewelry, and it helps me get by.
Have you been successful down here on the mall much?
Yes, I think it's a really good place to sell things. There's a lot of people from all over, and they seem to really like the work, and that's encouraging to me.
Any hassles from police or security guards?
Not too much, but you need to be on your game. In fact, right now, every hour you have to move. And so by the time I set up, and it confuses people because they come back to buy and I'm gone. And so right now, in fact, I'm a little bit under pressure because I've got to go put money in the meter. I did finally get a car after 2 years, yay, with jewelry money.
How are your shoulders?
And fine, well, they were very painful for 2 years, but finally were very comfortable, yeah, as long as I don't overdo it. So.
No heavy lifting.
Yeah, I hire a lot of work done, more than I would like. You know, that's where a lot of my profits go, so.
And your name is?
I'm Jeannie.
I'm Robert Jeannie. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you actually came from a difficult situation, you were telling me.
When I broke the shoulders and I'm just totally helpless, I didn't know what would happen. The city has been very helpful to help me get to the next step.
You actually had your home foreclosed on as well?
No, I had lost my home back in 2003 because of major surgeries. I had 7 tumors. So
I couldn't afford to pay the mortgage payments.
Exactly, and I did lose everything. I lost my entire down payment.
What about the wonderful health system that America has?
Well, you know what? I have to say that Wendy Leonard, my doctor at the county, has been just a gem. In fact, she donates 2 months out of her year to go to to Rwanda and help the AIDS kids. So I certainly can't say anything bad about her.
And she's yet been, you lost your home because of health needs.
Well, they took too long to approve a surgery. If they had approved it in 01, I would have been back to work in 2 months. I was using a walker toward the end, and my health collapsed completely. And that's probably one reason when I broke my shoulders, because when I fell, the shoulders were in rough shape already from, you know, having a bad stick shift and having to use the walker and everything I had to go through. So, yep, it isn't so easy sometimes when you start going on a downward spiral. Always worked hard my whole life, but, you know, this is what I do.
Thank you.
And over here with his bag of num-nums is Robert Leon Hutchinson, Jr., a.k.a. Hutch.
Hutch, a.k.a. Laughing Dog, a.k.a. Lone Wolf, a.k.a. Eagle that Flies.
Hutch, have you been out of jail? Have you been in
I've been out of jail, yes. My jail days are over.
And we have another caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Free Radio. This is Becky Johnson calling.
The infamous beggar backer.
I'm calling with a little announcement. Apparently, Cafe Huff will be making an appearance tomorrow morning, 8-ish, in front of the courthouse. Possibly Peace Camp 2012. Not sure which.
What is Cafe Huff?
Well, it's an information table, which also serves some lovely refreshments.
And that's going to be.
This will be a simple fair. We're going to be seeking signatures on a petition to repeal the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and the lodging law. And we will be seeking donations for Linda LaMaster's defense fund.
You're going to be with umbrellas, I suppose. I hear it's going to be raining tomorrow.
Oh, will it? Well, if so, then probably we will do it in the atrium.
And that's the area between the courthouse and the county building where there's a coffee cart and such?
Yeah, or maybe up on the steps, you know, where under the eaves there. I'm not sure is what the rain's going to do. So, but irregardless, there will be Linda's. Alex Byers' closing statements continue on tomorrow. He's only gotten 40 minutes in so far about the evils of Peace Camp 2010, you know, with all those, you know, it used to be all nice and clean and everyone could go there. And then those people came and then it was bad. All those bad people were there with all their bad things and their.
So this this Byers guy, Alex Alex Byers is the district attorney, right? Who's he also has sort of a second person with him at the table, I understand, too. I understand you were out in the hallway waiting patiently to be a witness, but for some reason you weren't called. What would you have testified to, Becky, if you had been called?
I was simply to testify that I had come up and given Linda a blanket at 11 p.m. I got a whole bunch of boxes of blankets, and that she was sitting on the steps and talking to Coral, and that Chris was back in the corner coughing his lungs out, and but she didn't have a blanket of her own there.
Do you remember what happened to Kerbugger Chris? I know he was arrested. Was he taken to the hospital? How did he do after
no,
that?
No, they just took him to jail. And he probably should have gone to the hospital.
You know, I guess he's the lone defendant who, there were many people who were given 647E tickets. Many of them pleaded guilty. Many of them never appeared. Of course, a number of them were tried, including Ed Fry and Gary Johnson. But he's the only one who's outstanding, I guess, beyond Linda's from that period. And I guess he fled to Canada to avoid prosecution in a federal what was it called? The case where the county website was taken down for 19 minutes or interfered with as a protest against the attacks on Peace Camp 2010. Is that accurate?
I have heard all of those things, yes.
Huh. What did you hear of the closing statements of Mr. Byers, the district attorney, that struck you one way or another?
Well, Byers has kind of a circular argument. He says that the people there at Peace Camp 2010, that they were camping, and camping is the same as lodging. Lodging is equals camping, and camping equals sleeping, so sleeping equals lodging. But then he said the definition of lodging, you didn't have to sleep to lodge. You can lodge without sleeping. And that that possessions are an indication of lodging, but not necessary. You could be lodging there with no possessions. It's more that you're somewhere they don't want you to be, or what they say you do not have the permission to be. So one begs the question, so what determines who has permission to be on public property and who doesn't? What's the criteria? And according to Byers, it seems to be whether you're sitting or laying down or sleeping, and those preclude being on public property. So I guess that what we've learned is that D.A. Bob Lee, and by his extension, D.A., you know, Alex Byers, were setting the tone for a very upright society that does no sitting, lying down, or, God forbid, sleeping.
Was there
He also compared breaking the law to driving a car 100 miles an hour as an example of why you don't break laws.
Becky, was there an actual definition of lodging given? I know there was some kind of controversy about the higher judge Maragonda ruling that sleeping per se is not lodging. And I understand the definition for lodging given by the judge in this case, Rebecca Connolly, shifted in the course of the trial. Do you have any information about that?
Yes, there was like a slideshow, a PowerPoint presentation at the end, and in with that they had a definition of lodging given to the jury that included all the language that we have found so distasteful in the past about settling in, and this time, you know, you not necessarily sleeping. And it's incredibly vague and overbroad definition. So I'm working on that. I'll be posting that to the Huff website probably tonight. Some notes from the trial. We're kind of going through it right now.
And you mean the Huff website, or the Santa Cruz Indie Media, or your own Becky Johnson One Woman Talking website? Which of those?
No, the Huff that. Yahoo groups.
Oh, the Huff email group.
The Huff list.
Yeah,
the
I'll
Huff
try,
email
I'll
list.
Try and grab your article and put it up on the Santa Cruz Indie Media for those who don't have that email. Anything else? I'd love to hear more, but unfortunately I'm approaching 8 o'clock. It looks like I'm going to be ousted from the studio shortly.
Just, you know, that not that it's a fun thing watching these trials, but it's really quite an eyeful. And, of course, we haven't seen Jonathan Gettleman's his closing arguments. The show starts 8:30 in the morning, and please come to support Linda LeMaster. She had quite a grilling today. I mean, she went on the stand at 10:15, and she didn't get off till 3:30 this afternoon. She went through two breaks and a lunch of a series of questions from police and exhibits and. I was barred from the courtroom, so I wasn't able to see what it was on a blow-by-blow basis. But
you were barred from the.
It seemed pretty grueling.
You were barred from the courtroom as a witness. Why weren't you? Why weren't you chosen to testify?
Well, Jonathan Gettleman needed to get certain elements onto the record in testimony. It didn't matter whether it was my testimony or Linda's or one of the officers, and he may be using some testimony from the Peace Camp 2010, the Peace Camp 6 trial with Ed Fry and Gary Johnson and four other defendants.
Yeah, I noticed he had a transcript of that trial. It must have been expensive and hefty. It looked pretty it's interesting. I hadn't seen that transcript. What would you have testified to if you had been chosen to test, if you had chosen to speak, if they had chosen to call you?
I would have testified to the fact that we had this protest against the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, and then we later added amnesty for pass tickets as one of our demands. And that people from all over the city came up and stayed with us, both because they were with us on the issue and because it was a clean, dry, well-lit place in which they could sleep, and we had provided a porta potty. And having people who cared about the plight that they're experiencing was a really powerful experience for this ragtag group of people. Many of them have mental health issues, substance abuse problems. The jail was right across the street, and they released the drunks out of the drunk tank at 4 a.m. and send them over. So, you know, there really was no way for us to assert any control. We didn't have any authority. But the common purpose and the caring overrode that. And some of my finest moments were at Peace Camp 2010. I really thought that... That we started something there. And sure enough, you know, I mean, the Occupy movement that started, you know, the Wall Street Occupy movement was very much in that vein.
How would you contrast the two-month-long San Lorenzo Park occupation camp that was dispersed by police so with such massive force on December 8th of last year with the peace camp 2010, which was dispersed by the sheriffs around the time Linda got her citation, August 8th or 9th or 10th, thereabouts? How would you contrast those two camp experiences? Because you were involved in an observer and writer and a supporter on both of those occasions, right?
Well, the San Lorenzo Park had a whole lot more going for it. I mean, people put up tents. They erected the teepee there. They had kitchens. There were people from the community that came and provided donations and helped with cleanup crews and things like that. I mean, it was a very working concern, and I thought that it was getting more and more organized and better in a way as time went on. I especially enjoyed seeing how a lot of the housed middle-class people that joined with the Occupy Santa Cruz with the intent of perhaps impacting more national issues, and then how the homeless were people, many of them were people that we knew from Peace Camp 2010 that sort of joined in that encampment. And initially there was a lot of friction, even talk of a kind of a Maginot line that existed between that. But that dissolved. Many of the homeless people integrated into Occupy Santa Cruz. Many of the housed people developed new attitudes towards their homeless campmates. And I thought it progressed attitudes towards homelessness in the city. I see a lot more people are aware of the issues now. Maybe they're dug in, but they're not ignoring it anymore.
Becky,
so I see progress, even though we're really, really in the cesspool trenches now.
You were also a part of a much earlier, more, limited in certain senses, more extensive in other senses, the City Hall Sleepers Vigil of 1996 by Dan Hopkins and Sean Alimi and many others camped out in front of...
8 months long.
They stayed a continuous protest in front of City Hall, but they tried to stay awake at night, which would be illegal now because the City Hall has made a forbidden zone at night. You can't even be there with a protest sign. But how would you contrast not so much that experience, although that interests me too, but how protesters were treated by authorities, which was pretty nasty at points, but the protest went on for 8.5 months, whereas more recently, Peace Camp 2010 was broken up, at least at the county building, after 1 month, and of course the Occupy campsite was broken up after about 2 months.
I think Peace Camp 2010 lasted 90 days.
Well, I'm talking about in front of the county building. At that particular spot, but you're right. It moved to City Hall.
Yeah, no.
But what I'm saying is, what I'm asking you is, law enforcement's attitude and the prosecution's attitude towards these kind of protests changed?
Well, at first, law enforcement looked the other way when Occupy Santa Cruz set up. That was a very different response. That was certainly not what we experienced at Peace Camp 2010. You know, we didn't have any tents up, not one. People didn't really have, they didn't have furniture or, you know.
Yeah, certainly those were differences. I guess what I'm thinking more of, and those are all considerations I wasn't thinking about, but what I was thinking about was the prosecutions and the attitude of the courts. I mean, Mayor Rotkin at that time in 96 tried to ban protests at night, not even a campground, but just somebody sitting there with a sign. Mayor Rotkin and then ex-Mayor Kennedy tried to destroy and remove signs, but the signs went back up. There was also attacks on people who posted little signs on the lamp site or people who were sitting on the low-lying planters. But those prosecutions were either minor. They didn't compare, for example, with the attacks on you and the other Santa Cruz 11 activists who admittedly were not really the part of the main Occupy protest, but that were linked up with Occupy as, you know, they came out of Occupy or they were sympathetic with Occupy, whatever.
Every time I go in the court, they call it the Occupy cases.
Right, and also Peace Camp 2010, they're prosecuting someone 2.5 years later. Well, two and a quarter years later, I don't think they would have ever even considered doing that in 1996. What's your sense?
Yeah, things are getting more repressive, It shows kind of a panic on the part of the authorities that this just is, they're not getting the respect, quote unquote, that they think they deserve, quote unquote.
I agree with you there.
There's a big pushback.
And finally, although I don't see Uncle Dennis, I don't know where he is. I'm going to have to put on an old show. You were also
7 minutes over now.
You were also a chief witness.
You lawbreaker.
Yeah, you were also a chief witness in the civil trial of the two mayors across the hill,
and you
observed much of that whole process. Do you have any general comments about how that whole thing went that stay with you and struck you that people may not have heard on the air? Although I know you haven't probably been listening to every minute of the show, but I've talked about it in the last few shows on and off. Any thoughts you've had? I mean, you were the person who was responsible for putting on discs and tapes, and you kept a very elaborate notes as I.
We had witness testimony, but we just had the videos, and if people looked at them, you know, because you whisper to someone in a meeting and somebody else is whispering it that's ignored, that's not a reason to eject someone from a meeting. And then if they don't go, follow up with handcuffing them and arresting them and carrying them off to jail, That's so over the top. And I'm surprised that the jury went that way, but they were a very, very upscale, upper middle class jury with not a single one of them had ever been to a public meeting before. Not one of them. Not just a city council meeting, but just any kind of public meeting. So it wasn't at all a jury of your peers there, Robert, because they didn't know